Game on.
Football.
That was Eddie Dunbar talking to Shane Stokes of Velo Nation. And yeah, let us see how Eddie Dunbar and Darren Rafferty go in La Vuelta over the next 3 weeks. It should be very interesting viewing indeed for all those who like to waste your afternoon watching Eurosport in the sun. Now, let's go to football. Big successes for Irish soccer last night. Alan Tony O'Donoghue will be joining us in just a minute. But St. Patrick's Athletic through to the Conference League playoff round after a 1-0 victory over Sabah in Baku in Azerbaijan last night. They won 2-0 in aggregate, and what a great signing Zach Elbozedi is.
Yeah, fantastic signing, and I think this is a real sign of Stephen putting a stamp on things. Andrew, it obviously hasn't, I suppose, gone the way that everybody would have expected when Stephen took over initially, and the league form has been very inconsistent and up and down, but it was always going to take time in terms of him.
Those expectations that he was going to come in and change it all around in a week and a half.
And it was never going to happen like that, Andrew, and like most jobs, but particularly this one, he's looking to put his own stamp on things and put his players on the pitch that he wants rather than all the ones that he inherited. So Elbozedi would be one of his signings, and he's already made a huge impact. I'm a big fan of him, and that was a massive goal last night. The fact that they got true, when you consider obviously the fact that they've gone to Azerbaijan as well, the logistics of the travel implications, all that kind of thing. They had a league game at the weekend as well, so I think it's a really good result. They went down to 10 men after 27 minutes, so you would have expected the Pats to come through after that, playing against 10 men, but you still have to get the job done. They scored not long after, just after half time, 48 minutes Elbozedi, and they ran out comfortable winners then. They've put themselves in a position now, Andrew, as you say, a playoff game next week in Istanbul over the two legs, obviously, and that would be unbelievable if we could get two teams through to a playoff round, because obviously Shamrock Rovers, even though they still have the game to qualify for the Europa League playoff round, they're guaranteed the Conference League group stage. So if we could get St. Pat's into a group stage and Shamrock Rovers, I think it would be phenomenal.
And just to let people know how much it means in terms of finances, Pat's already have ensured that they're going to pocket 1.28 million for the club without winning another game in the competition. Isn't that incredible money for League of Ireland club?
Unbelievable, Andrew. And this is the whole reward with obviously the challenge of trying to get yourself into Europe and getting yourself through a couple of rounds. Because if you look at the paltry sum of money that's on offer to win a league playing 36 matches, when you look at you're getting through maybe one or two rounds, you mentioned 1.2 million there. I think Shamrock Rovers stand to earn 3.1 million as it stands. So it's phenomenal money, it really is, and can transform clubs. And that's why everybody is trying to get themselves into Europe. But it's one thing getting yourself into Europe, then you have to try and get through the matches. And I think they deserve huge credit to two clubs, because their domestic form, it must be said, Andrew, it's very up and down, very indifferent, inconsistent. I watched Shamrock Rovers at the weekend draw with Drogheda, and they probably should have been beaten by Drogheda. So it would have been hard to fancy them then in this game last night. But then they obviously went out and put in a really good performance against Sielce from Slovenia and got themselves qualified, so they deserve massive credit.
So we're all going to Thessaloniki now.
Well, it looks like it, Jad. It's going to be a tough game. Pauk, that they play, played here a couple of years back against Bohemians. I was at the game.
Yeah.
Bo's random close as well. So Shamrock Rovers will be definitely in with a chance. The question I would love to know, and and Tony will give his view on it when he joins us as well, but just maybe from Stephen Bradley's point of view of Shamrock Rovers, because the money is so big, Andrew, and I don't think there's a great deal of difference in the Europa League group stage as the Conference League group stage, I think for our clubs it's more realistic that we could pick up wins in the Conference League group stage than you might get the glamour tie in the Europa League group stage, but you'll be up against it in terms of the opposition that you will face. Whereas if you go into the Conference League against teams of a similar nature to ourselves, of countries of a similar size, I think there's more realistic opportunities, not just to win matches in it, but potentially come out of a group, which would be unheard of.
Yeah, on that point, I think the last time Rovers went into one of those group stages, Thessaloniki were in the group, Pauk were in the group, as were Spurs and Rubin Kazan, and
you're up against it.
They didn't get 1 point, understandably enough at the time.
Absolutely, because of what you're dealing with and the resources of those clubs and what you're coming up against. I think it should be mentioned as well, Andrew, with Shamrock Rovers that time as well, the last time they were in the group stage, they were challenging for the domestic league here and going all out for it, and they were having to juggle the squad, and they were having real problems obviously trying to juggle the squad because they were going after a league title here. And it almost came to the stage where they were, I wouldn't say given up on the European kind of journey, if you like, but they were playing second string outfits in some of those games. In this instance, where they are now off the back of winning four league titles, and even though domestically they've struggled this year, they can go all guns blazing and concentrate solely on the group stage, which is a phenomenal position to be in as well. And it just goes to show, when you see the result they picked up last night, we all know the calibre that's in that squad in terms of the quality that they have as well. I think they could do really well in a group stage.
Let us bring in our football correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue. Tony, were you happy to see two Irish clubs go on in Europe? And just an interesting one, Stephen Kenny celebrating his 50th game as a manager in Europe. That's a lot of experience.
It's a phenomenal achievement, you have to say, and he's proven time again that Europe is the stage where he seems to be most set. Last night, for Pats to win both home and away, that's so unusual, extraordinary really from a League of Ireland point of view. And the game I was at last night at Tallaght, Shamrock Rovers, talking to Stephen Bradley afterwards, and he was reflective. He was very interesting to hear him say that he had been in contact with Stephen Kenny all afternoon, obviously talking to each other, wishing each other's teams luck. And it's great to see that sort of camaraderie among the managers, because those results last night were not just good for the respective clubs, but I think good for the league in general, the coefficient in the long term, and the way the league is perceived. So yeah, I mean, two great results, and two results to build on. I mean, obviously from Shamrock Rovers' point of view, they're guaranteed group stage football. Pat's one game, one tie away from that. But who's to say they both can't be active in football up to Christmas and even beyond?
Alan was just talking that it might be better for Rovers if they don't beat PAOK and go into the group stages of the Conference League, a league that they'll probably find more of a level where they can be competitive at. Yeah. What do you think of that?
What's interesting this year as well, I mean, we've all been saying about it being the group stages, but both the Europa and the Conference League are different. There are more games. It's more a league. There's going to be either eight games or six games, home and away. So it's a lot of football to play. And in terms of your television deals and the prize money that you get, in terms also of, I thought one thing that was disappointing for me last night, the crowd in Tallaght was 6,153. And for the game against Sparta Prague previously, it was close to a sellout. I mean, the sellout now in the new Tallaght is 10,500. And for whatever reason, I mean, gosh, I've heard all sorts of, you could call them excuses. Was it electric picnic? Was it the builders' holidays? Was it whatever? But I would have expected, for the achievement that it was, you know, that more fans of football, not just Shamrock Rovers fans, would support the Irish club in Europe. And I'm not sure that always follows through. But in terms of the Conference League or the Europa League would have a bit more prestige, but probably have clubs where you're more or less going to get a tongue every game. Conference League, perhaps it would be more your level. And then if you are doing well, it's funny, I'm here in Cork City, you know, they're in the first division. When you go well in the first division, sometimes your crowds can be as good or better than if you're struggling in a higher league. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But look, I guess the mindset of the two managers will be they want to win the next game, and that's the mindset of every professional football manager in every league, I think.
I was just reminded by Alan when he made his point about that in the 2011-2012 campaign, Rovers were in with PAOK, Spurs and Rubin Kazan, and they failed to secure a single point. So yeah, I know they could be a lot closer to that.
I think
this
they
point.
Lost 2-1 at home and 3-1 away. So PAOK are a very decent side. At 2011, it was all new, and it was wonderful. And you know, the Tottenham Hotspur game was a bit of kind of Premier League glamour as well. As I recall, I think that was Harry Kane's first goal for Tottenham Hotspur. But I would remember that, wouldn't I? But yeah, look, it is exciting. But there are quality teams. I mean, last night I have to say, Celje were decent. What showed, I think, was the strength of their bench. They changed the game and got back into the game by the amount of substitutes they use and how well he was able to shuffle his pack. So Rovers had to deal with that. And interestingly, I think, you know, that Graham Burke came on for Ferrugia, who was the goal scorer, and scored the goal that ultimately got them through to the next round.
Tony, what's massive for them, I feel, as well, and we just touched on it before he came on air, because of their indifferent form and the inconsistency that they've shown in the league, when you think back to the last group stage that they had when they were going for the league, and they almost kind of relinquished their challenge really, because they focused solely on the league and they were playing second string outfits in some of those European games and couldn't really go after it in the manner that they wanted to. Whereas now I think they can go solely after this, as you say, games potentially up to Christmas without the distractions of potentially a league challenge, because we don't really think they're going to win the league now. So I think that's a huge advantage.
Don't think for a moment that Stephen Bradley thinks they're out of the league race. No. And if you remember, Rory Higgins, who's here tonight, and Damien Duff were both really anxious to make the point, insistent that the league title is a three-horse race.
Yeah, but they made it, Tony, before they played Drogheda on Sunday. That was a killer of a result for them on Sunday.
It certainly was, but, you know, I would think Shelburne's wobble, if you want to call it that, is something that will concern Shelburne fans and will give some hope to both Derry and obviously the Shamrock Rovers. But yeah, the Drogheda result was desperate. And it's hard. Look, what Rovers are suffering from as well is injuries to key players. I mean, missing Rory Gaffney and Johnny Kenny last night and still coming out 3-1 winners on the night. You know, you have to give them credit for that. And you have to give the manager credit. He's been under a bit of pressure, just extraordinarily, you might think. You know, four in a row league title winning manager. And internally, he's come under pressure from Shamrock Rovers. But they're in Europe now. They've released a lot of funding and possibly a bit more to come. So, you know, they haven't given up on the league. And I hope it'll lead to an interesting run-in and a decisive title race.
Hopefully it does, and I hope Rory and Damien
they won't be able to combine the two. No chance.
Rovers?
No chance. So that's what I actually think. It might be a blessing in disguise if they are out of the league. And I'm not saying they're going to just give up on the league, of course, while they're in the mix. But if you're trying to juggle European football and going for a league title, whereas I think they can concentrate solely now on the Conference League group stages, and actually I think they could get results and get themselves through the group potentially.
Tony Allen has his mind made up. I think we just might send this recording to Stephen Bradley and let him play it repeatedly in the Rovers dressing room. Let's move on. A lot of people think that the game in Old Trafford tonight between Manchester United and Fulham is the biggest game of the night. But of course, Tony, they're dead wrong, because it's happening in Turner's Cross.
The biggest game of the night is where I am. You know
yes,
that, Andrew.
I do. That's what we send you. Cork City up against Derry, the league leaders in Division 1, up against one of the biggest clubs in the Premier Division. And Cork City flying high at the moment, not only in the First Division but also with some new faces around, and momentum and the atmosphere must be good.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose the signings, or the re-signings almost, if you like, of Rory Keating from St. Pat's. Rory, who was a fan favourite down here and a prolific goal scorer, went to St. Pat's and it didn't work out for him, and he came back what he would almost consider home to Cork, and hopefully that's a move that'll serve him well. And then Shawnee Maguire being re-signed, coming home to Cork as well. Like, Shawnee had a phenomenal 18 months at Cork, you know, winning the double in 2017, scoring the winning goal in the FAI Cup final. He really was on fire. And every other defence in the League of Ireland was terrified, including Dundalk at the time, because the rivalry between Dundalk and Cork, between Stephen Kenny and John Caulfield, was legendary at that time. So Shawnee's back. And it's really lifted the fan base, the city, I think. You know, they're delighted because they're now seeing that Dermot Usher and Cork City are putting some resources behind the club and helping Tim to build a team that can be competitive in the Premier Division next season. They're 15 points clear. No one is counting chickens except me. And they're hoping that that will lead to automatic promotion. And it should, of course. But with the likes of Sean Murray as well, Rory Keating and Shawnee Maguire, you'd like to think that they're starting to build a team that won't just be, you know, treading water in the Premier Division, but will be up there hoping to, you know, at least be among the European spots, if not in a season or so time, you know, challenging again for the big honours.
And Tony, in spite of the usual and I suppose understandably naturally high levels of Cork confidence, do you think Derry City would be hopeful that they could get a good run in the Cup?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Derry will have been so disappointed at their, what many people consider, a shambolic exit in Europe. I mean, you know, let's be honest, the way other people who aren't diehard League of Ireland fans, I suppose, judge the League of Ireland is against foreign opposition. And to go out against what some people were calling a pub team from Gibraltar, it really wasn't good enough or acceptable. And I think Rory Higgins and Derry City know that. They're second in the league. They're lurking just behind Shelburne. And we'll hope, obviously, to get that. But the Cup has always been really important to Derry City. They've got a strong team out as well tonight, as you can imagine. And as the Premier team, second in the table against a team from the First Division, obviously, they'll be huge favourites. Pat Hooban up top, Duffy playing, Mullen playing, Patching and O'Reilly in the middle, Dummigan, Shane McElhinney, Colin Doherty, the back four. It's a very strong lineup, so they will face formidable opposition. Remember, it's only two seasons ago that Rory Higgins led Derry to an FAI Cup final success against Shelburne, against Damien Duff Shelburne. They were really taught a lesson, wasn't that? 4-0 at the end of the day. So, you know, the Cup is very, very special to Derry City, no more than usual this season. And after their European exit, yeah, they'll have their eye on this competition. The way the competition is kind of branching out as well, there are not that too many other strong teams in it, you might say. So they will be hoping if they get through tonight, they might get an easier tie in the next round, and before you know it, you're in an FAI Cup semi-final.
Speaking about two of those stronger teams, Shelburne hosting Galway United, who've done well against Damien Duff's side in recent times. Alan, do you think Shells will have too much in the tank for Galway, or will the distraction of that league campaign be sort of somewhere in the back of their minds?
I think it's actually come at a good time for them, because Tony referenced the little stumble that they're having potentially in the league at the moment. So I think the Cup coming around might be a nice distraction for them. Tough game though against Galway. There's lots of teams dotted around at this last 16 stage who you would have fancied them to beat. Probably a good 13 out of the 16 that's left, bar the likes of Derry and Galway, maybe Sligo Rovers, but they're facing Premier Division opposition. It won't faze them, and I think it might be good for Shelburne to actually, as I said, the distraction that they'll have tonight in the Cup might be good, and I think they might get the result tonight. I think Damien Duff will have eyes on winning the Cup as well. They have the squad to challenge for both. There's no league upcoming game until next week, so they can go all guns blazing after this tonight. But John Caulfield deserves credit for what he's done at Galway since he's come back into the Premier Division as well this year. They've consolidated their position. They'll be fine. There's no threat, relegation, anything like that, so they can go all out for the Cup as well. It's to tie it around. I think it's a tough one for Shelburne, but I think they might just have the edge.
No, it's not to tie it around this year. It's Cork City against Derry City.
As I was uttering those words, he says Tony is definitely going to jump in here.
And you know what, when I listen to quotes of Alan Cawley, and when he often names out all the various clubs he played for, the Jack Nicklaus of the League of Ireland, yeah. Well, I want to wish one of my former clubs, Wilton United, are away to Drogheda in the FAI Cup this evening. And yeah, I hope, no disrespect to Drogheda, but I wish Wilton the very best of luck in that one.
Come on, Wilton.
Let's mention the others as well. Ballyfermot are up against Wexford FC tonight. All these games kick off at 7:45. Treaty United, they host Pike Rovers. Limerick Derby.
Derby here, well, yeah, well.
No love lost there, Tony. No.
Actually, that's a game that you pay money to see as well. Hopefully that one goes well.
Okay, Waterford are up against Athlone Town this evening, and Sligo Rovers, Alan's beloved Sligo Rovers, they are entertaining UCD tomorrow, and Bohemians making the long trip down to play Kerry FC, Tony, tomorrow on Sunday.
Oh, are they?
Yes, they are.
That's the
any word on that, Tony?
The controversy. Well, actually, we were joking, I suppose, with Mark Scanlon, the lead director, last night at the end of the game in Talla. Rovers have appealed because of the ineligibility, as they see it, of Dawson Devoy. So yeah, they've their appeal wasn't upheld, and yet they feel legally and that they're in the right and that they've appealed again. Mark Scanlon was saying it has nothing to do with him now, in a sense that it has to be another independent disciplinary committee that has to be adjudicate on this. I think the Bowes Kerry game will go ahead unless we hear something in the next 12 hours.
It has to be said that Bohemians did do what they were instructed to do.
Yeah, so this could be an FAI issue as such in terms of
Never seen one of those before.
Who made the decision and what right had they to make the decision. But what they would say is that Devoy had a suspension in the EFL Trophy. There isn't a commensurate or a similar competition here in which to serve that suspension. So the FAI decided that that suspension should be served in the next league game rather than in the next game the player plays, which in this instance was an FAI Cup game. Bowes had clearly asked that question in advance, so you can't say there's any blame to Bohemians or to the player in this instance, but there isn't an EFL Trophy competition in this country. So if it's adjudicated upon again, which it will be, I'm told, and if the appeal is rejected for a second time, well, then the ball goes back to Shamrock Rovers, and if they still believe right is right and might is might, I think that they could possibly take their appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. But that's, you know, taking it out of the jurisdiction. It's going to be expensive. And when they've got other things on their mind, like, you know, group stage European competition, chasing the title that they've won for the last 4 years, maybe discretion might be the better part of valour in that case, and they might decide that, look, we think we're in the right, but we let it go. Or else it goes on and it goes legal, and we'll be talking about this for weeks and months to come. Meantime, Bohemians will be Kerry, or Kerry will be Bohemians, and they'll be left in a bit of limbo.
And I don't think Rovers will be expecting too much cross support from Bohemians fans in Europe.
I think this will drag. I think it might drag, because as Tony said, you have two clubs who feel as though they're in the right, and once if it leans now in the favour of Shamrock Rovers, you'll have Bohemians feeling aggrieved, and then do they appeal? So I think this could run a bit.
Oh Lord. Tony, there's two things left to mention. The Avenir Cup tomorrow, Shamrock Rovers and Galway United, a competition that goes sort of under the radar, but it is worth giving a mention tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I spoke to the managers and the captains this week. I could say poor old Galway. Galway are the holders of the trophy, of the title, and unfortunately, you'd imagine, from the sake of the competition, there isn't a club from the north of the border in the final, but there are two good clubs, Galway the holders, as I say, and Shamrock Rovers, women who have been disappointing this season. There's no question about that, so a trophy for them would lift everyone around the club. But Galway lost the toss to decide on home venue. Now, it was either going to be AM&DC Park, and I'm told, I haven't been there for a while, but I'm told the surface is terrific there at the moment, and Talla, as we saw last night and as we know, is terrific as well. Galway lost the toss. I think they're happy enough to play in the big wide spaces of Talla in order to try and retain their trophy. I don't think that shows any fear of them, but Galway in a wider context and in a Gaelic Games context, unfortunately for them, they've gone to Dublin a lot recently and come home empty-handed. So the girls are hoping that they lift a trophy tomorrow evening and cross the Shannon with a bit of silverware for Galway and the people of Galway, not just the football people. They say they've had great support from the GAA community, as they too themselves supported the GAA community. That's 7:35. It's live on TG Carr as well. I think it's well worth a watch.
And Tony, I can't let you go without just mentioning the fact that legendary Irish football manager Jim McLaughlin died at the age of 83 yesterday. And I know, given the fact that he was 83, his life and his achievements mightn't have had much of an impact on our regular 2FM listeners, but could you put the sort of general contribution he made to the League of Ireland and to Irish football in context for us?
Oh, he was a magnificent football man. He was a terrific player. He made his debut at 16 years of age as a striker with Derry. He played for Northern Ireland. He crossed the water and played with Birmingham, Shrewsbury Town, Swansea City, Peterborough. Came back home as player manager with Dundalk. He managed Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers, Derry City. He was co-manager at Shelburne. He won the league three times with Dundalk and three FAI Cups. He won three league championships and two FAI Cups with Shamrock Rovers. He won the treble with Derry City in 1989, something that has not been achieved by any other manager. Eight leagues in total, six FAI Cups. You know, Stephen Kenny's achievements in several clubs have been spectacular, but nothing compared to Jim McLaughlin. Stephen Bradley's achievement, winning four in a row. Jim McLaughlin won three of Rovers' famous four in a row. He wasn't there for the fourth. And Stephen Bradley is up there in terms of his achievements as a manager, but not in as many clubs as Jim McLaughlin managed. So as a player, as a manager and as a person, I was lucky enough to meet him a few times, and a gentle soul, a wonderful football man, a shrewd football man as well, and that he could do it in so many different clubs. Whatever magic he has, he kept it with him anywhere he went.
Tony, thank you very much for joining us tonight. The English Premier League is not quite as important as everything we've just spoken about, but we'll be talking about that after this break.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
It's almost 6:48 this Friday evening, and the English Premier League season gets underway in an hour and 12 minutes. We're joined live from Old Trafford by Peter Smith. Peter, have you got some team news for us?
I'm just getting it up now, Andrew, if you can bear with us one second. It's Manchester United's opening game of the campaign, and one which obviously is going to be so important that I can see that Mazraoui, the Moroccan signed from Bayern Munich, is in for a debut. Harry Maguire is playing as well. Mason Mount gets a game. Rashford starting, as is Amad Diallo. The only debutant is Mazraoui. And just having a quick look at the bench, Xerxes, the French defender, he's on there. Anthony's on there. No sign of Jadon Sancho in the 20 tonight, which is quite interesting. But quite simply, Andrew, Manchester United need to improve on last season's campaign, which yielded a trophy, a second consecutive trophy for Erik ten Hag. But some of the statistics of last season were just simply dreadful. Worst ever in the Champions League, worst in terms of league position, league standing since 1989-90 season. And this is probably for me the most alarming stat. They faced 667 shots against them last season in the Premier League. And I'll open this one to you, Andrew. Who do you think conceded more? The only team that conceded more.
Sheffield United.
And have a little guess how many more shots they conceded.
Alan Colley says five.
Alan's not doing bad, actually. If you double it and add one.
Okay, we'll take 11.
That's the exact answer. 11. So, mathematical answer, yeah, 11. No, but this is Manchester United, Andrew, facing 667 shots. I mean, you might forgive Sheffield United having come up from the Championship and really, really struggled to have had that many shots against them, but not one of the biggest, greatest clubs in the world facing that many from oppositions, which suggests that they've been too easy to play against. The central defensive signings, well, there's three new central defensive signings this summertime, clearly getting it right at the back, allied to a solid midfield and scoring goals. There's got to be improvement this season. This campaign cannot surely be as bad as the last campaign.
Peter, just looking at the team news there, strong team, obviously, United have named, but one notable omission, and he's on the bench, is Garnacho. Any reason as to why, or is it just because of maybe his exertions with Argentina and he's just not fully right? But he looked sharp enough when he came off the bench in the Community Shield.
Yeah, well, the manager was saying in his pretty much press conference about not quite being ready, and I think what he meant by that was players coming back from the international competition, signings of two key players coming rather late. I think what he meant was he'd sooner have had another week or two to properly prepare. I can only think that it's a tactical thing, Alan, and that maybe he'll get introduced into the action at some point. He can be an impact player, can't he, off the bench? And if Fulham are defending deep or making it very difficult for United to find space in the final third of the field, maybe he's someone that can come off the bench and make an impact. Mason Mount, an interesting one for me, Al, coming in and starting. He had a rather auspicious campaign last year, having joined from Chelsea for big money. Menu. A lot of people will be expecting him to embellish his career. He was superb for England during the European Championships. And getting Marcus Rashford scoring again, that's going to be key in terms of Manchester United if they are to make a top four challenge this season. I think probably you would say winning the title would be slightly beyond them, but who knows?
And Emile Smith-Rowe on the team sheet for Fulham tonight. Quick predictions on this one. Alan, will United have too much for Fulham?
I think they will, Andrea. I'm excited to see United. Peter touched on, obviously, the fact that I suppose the almost embarrassing stats and the performances last year that were really, really poor. They've strengthened in that central area in terms of the formation that they're playing. It's almost like a box now, and you'd expect with Maynou sitting beside Casemiro, with Fernandes and Mount ahead of them, that there'd be a little bit more protection, you would hope so, and those two wide strikers. I think they will win tonight and get themselves off to a good start, but like Peter said, they have to have a much better season this year.
Okay, Fergal Brennan joins us from Liverpool. Liverpool, another club that wants to get off to a good start. They are away to Ipswich Town tomorrow. Ipswich done a bit of business early in the day. Sammy Smodix from Blackburn Rovers and Calvin Phillips from Manchester City coming into the team. I think they got them in on time, so they would be available for tomorrow. Fergal, how do you think that one's going to go?
I think, with all due respect to Ipswich, the excitement of getting the deals done with Smodix and Phillips coming in, I think if they can get through tomorrow with anything other than a fairly convincing or routine defeat, I think that'll be a bit of a positive start for them. It's incredibly difficult, obviously, for promoted sides to come up and make an impact on the Premier League. Kieran McKenna's been quite impressive. He was linked with some slightly bigger jobs, shall we say, this summer, and he opted to stay with Ipswich and signed a contract extension. But we know that from the get-go, they are going to be up against it in terms of Premier League experience through the squad. They are lacking. That's one of the big reasons that Calvin Phillips has come in to try and bolster them in that sense. As for Liverpool, obviously missing out on Martin Zubimendi, Arnie Slot addressed that in his press conference this morning and was very open about the fact that Liverpool did go for him. It looked like it was a potential to happen, and then the player himself just opted against it because he wants to stay with his hometown club in Real Sociedad. So as for Liverpool, the big stat obviously hanging over them is that they haven't signed a player on a permanent deal this summer, the only Premier League team not to have done so. I would imagine that will be rectified before the window closes at the end of the month. But going into tomorrow, they've been good in pre-season, and they've also been benefited by a couple of really important players, notably Mo Salah, not having an international tournament this summer. He looks really, really hyped up for the season in what could potentially be his last year at Liverpool. Himself, Virgil van Dijk and Trent Alexander-Arnold all into their last year. And the likelihood is that not all three of them will be staying next season.
Okay, lads, let's fly through the rest of these games because we've got about 5 minutes left. Alan, Wolves, or actually let's go Arsenal and Wolves. Kick off at 3 o'clock. Arsenal have big, big title ambitions this season. Can they go on better than they did last season?
I think they can, Andrea. I fancied them strongly last year, and if you look at the trajectory that team is on, they've improved their points tally year on year. They only finished obviously a couple of points behind Man City, matched them right till the death like we thought they would, but just came up a little bit short. But they've strengthened with Calafiori coming in. They've a really strong squad as it is. Question mark maybe overdue, they need a centre forward, but I still think they have a really strong squad that can challenge Man City and go one better, to answer your question. I actually fancy them to win the league this year.
Okay, Fergal, back to Liverpool. Everton up against Brighton tomorrow afternoon at 3. Everton, it's a club looking for an owner. Can they find some form early on?
Hopefully. And it's difficult to kind of always put too much positivity behind Everton, because so many times on paper they should do better than they do, and they've obviously been mired in successive relegation battles over the last couple of seasons, points deductions, as you mentioned, the ownership issues and financial problems that they've had. But I think Sean Dyche, the way that he operates, this will be a positive summer for him. He's brought in players that he wanted, and the goal for him is to take them on a level or two. He knows that they're going to be on the edge of the relegation battle. I think he just wants them to be on the right edge of it, so that at the start of the year, and obviously moving into the final couple of months of the season, they're already safe. Are they in a position to push for top half? As kind of low ball as that might sound, it is the reality of where Everton are. And I think a lot of it will depend on if they do sell Jarrad Branthwaite in the last couple of weeks of the transfer window. I'd say that's probably unlikely now because of the business that Manchester United have done, and they were the most likely to go for him. He's not playing tomorrow, he's injured, so it'll be a Premier League debut for Jake O'Brien, which will be certainly something to keep an eye out for.
Okay, Peter, Southampton signed striker Cameron Archer from Aston Villa for £15 million today. They travel to play Newcastle United tomorrow, who have big title ambitions of their own.
Well, Newcastle obviously have got so much hype around them with the Saudi Arabian investment, and you know, are they really going to kick on, having finished in the top four the season before last? I think last year was a disappointment. They would have qualified for Europa Conference League had United not won the FA Cup, but that wasn't to be for them. I'm just curious to see what happens with Southampton. Their manager likes to play proper football out from the back, and I'm not sure that Russell Martin is going to persevere in the same way that Vincent Kempney did at Burnley last season, Andrew. You know, I think he likes his football from the six-yard line right up to the final third and score a spectacular goal. That's the way he plays. I just wonder whether he'll stick with it or whether he'll come unstuck and it'll be very similar to the way it happened at Burnley.
Alan, fly through these games because I want to ask everyone for their season's predictions in a minute, and we've got about 2 minutes. So West Ham United versus Aston Villa. That's a tough one.
And it'll be an exciting game. Obviously, Unai Emery did an unbelievable job of Villa, but now Lopetegui's come in. People wondering, be careful what you wish for in terms of Moyes. I thought he did a good job, a really good job, and was harshly treated in the end. But it's an exciting time now for West Ham, I think, with new manager. So there'll be goals in that tomorrow, Andrew.
Sunday, Chelsea versus Manchester City. That's an interesting one.
Well,
yeah.
Chelsea's box office in terms of the chaos that's going on, and I don't think Maresca will be able to fix that.
He says today that they're going to win the title.
Well, there you go. I mentioned that he
won. I don't know what title that was.
I think he's a good manager, but I just don't think he knows what he's getting himself in for, because it's chaos at that club.
And Spurs fans have to wait until Monday night to play Leicester City away.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Spurs. A year under their belt under Postecoglou, brilliant manager, had a real impact last year in terms of the football, but I think a good bit of business was getting Solanke in. I don't think Richarlison is going to get you enough goals, and I think Solanke had a brilliant season at Bournemouth, paid a lot of money for him, but I think it's good business.
Okay, Peter, quickly, who's going to go down? Who are the bottom three and who are the top eight?
Right, Manchester City are going to be the champions, Andrew, followed by Arsenal, Liverpool, Spurs, Newcastle, Manchester United, Chelsea and Aston Villa in that order. And going down, well, I'm sorry to say, it'll be, in my opinion, the three that came up. Ipswich, Leicester and Southampton in that order as well.
And Fergal, let's start at the bottom with you, because you had an interesting stat about those bottom threes.
Yeah, so the three teams that were relegated last year were the ones that were promoted the season before. That's the first time that's happened since 97-98. It's never happened in a Premier League season, in back-to-back Premier League seasons, where the three teams that have come up have gone straight back down. So my prediction is to ensure that that record continues. I'm going to go for two promoted sides to go down, Ipswich and Southampton. I'm backing Leicester to just about stay up, and I'm picking Nottingham Forest to go down. I think Steve Cooper's got a big job on his hands, and I think just lacking in a bit of quality, I think Leicester will sneak it and just stay up.
That's interesting. And your top eight?
City just about to win the title, probably Guardiola's last year. Arsenal second, Liverpool third, through gritted teeth, United fourth, just Spurs fifth. I'm going to get Villa to drop down to sixth, and then Chelsea probably to sack the manager mid-season and get someone in and get them to seventh.
Alan, let's go the other way. Will Man City win the league even with a 40-point deduction?
No, they won't. Arsenal are going to win it this year. I've been shouting about them for the last two seasons. This is the year they'll get it done. And I'll give you a quick one on the relegation. I think Southampton and Leicester will go down. I think Ipswich will stay up.
Okay, give us your top eight then. Arsenal,
United. No, I'm kidding. Arsenal, City, it will be between those two again. Then I'm going to go Liverpool, Spurs to get into the top four. I think they're going to have a big season. And then it's a mishmash of the other four, Andrew.
Okay, well, listen, we're well over time. Apologies to Blana Tracy. She is coming up after the news with the National Chart Show. RTE 2FM.